All right, welcome in with that. This is Baldwin and the Berg welcoming in on a Friday afternoon, just past 10:30. This is show number, we're going to call it 9.2. Last week we called it show number 9, but it was really show number 8. Today, the 8th of November, flying by as always. I am Austin Bechtold.
I'm Nathan Breisinger.
And I'm Andrew Goldvash.
Thank you for tuning in. Happy to be here as always. It's not snowing yet.
Even though we did get some flurries last night.
Did it end up snowing last night? I caught a couple
flurries looking out the door window.
There were some flurries. No, there was no snow sticking to the ground. Now, I did see videos out of Cranberry today.
Suppose there's a kid in my FYSP that is snowed in Ohio.
Oh, God.
I can't make class today. Yeah. Someone's commuting from Ohio.
Mitchell McIntosh.
Probably.
Maybe, but no snow in Cranberry, no snow in the Pittsburgh area or in RMU's area other than flurries not sticking to the ground, but
it's coming.
Snow is coming.
Winter is coming.
And that means the best part of sports.
Oh, you know it. That means Steelers is getting ramped up.
College football, hockey's in full effect. Basketball's coming into play here.
Pirates off season, yeah! No one's really excited for that other than me, who should not be excited because there'll be nothing to be excited about. But let's talk about the Steelers. Steelers, big, big winners over the Indianapolis Colts. I want to give a little thank you to Adam Vinatieri. I know you're pretty old, but...
And you're pretty great, but that might be one of the worst kicks I think I've ever seen.
Shanking that field goal down the middle.
I watched the majority of the game, but you know me. I had to go take care of work by
Nate had to go cut some grass, in November.
Yeah, so I was, like, listening to the fourth quarter on the radio, you know, Bill Hillgrove. And then I tuned out. It started working. I look at my phone, and I'm like, it was, like, final score 26-24 Steelers. I was like, is that right? Because I knew, like, the Colts were charging down the field with a minute left. And I'm like, hold up. Like, I had to take a double take. And I looked at he missed a field goal, and I was like, wow, that guy. And then I saw the replay of, you know, laces in. Oh
yeah, he hit. Vinatieri hit the laces.
Ace Ventura,
42-yard field goal with about a minute left. Absolutely missed. Steelers win by 2. Field goal that would have given the Colts the lead. Just a back and forth, unpredictable game where the Colts seen their starting quarterback go out.
Yeah. I mean, Brian Hoyer did step in big time for them. Yeah,
I mean, he had okay game. Was like, what, 179 yards
for
touchdowns
for Brian Hoyer. Out of anybody who's bounced around the league, just like pretty much any backup quarterback has.
Yeah, Brian Hoyer, you know, he's a guy that can play in the system if he's put in a pretty good situation. Now, like I said last week, I don't really necessarily like the Colts' weapons, but I think what Brian Hoyer was able to do with them to facilitate the offense went pretty smooth. His numbers on the day, 168 yards, one interception, and he threw 3 touchdown passes. He was the first quarterback to come off the bench.
He went first play, I believe, to Jack Doyle for that into the end zone. Yeah. Quick strike away.
3 touchdowns for like the first time since 1970 for, you know, a guy coming off the bench. I don't know if that's a Colts record or NFL record, but it's still impressive nonetheless. I think it's the Colts record coming in for when I'm not sure who it was, but someone came in to replace John Unitas. 1970. That was the last time it happened. But, you know, pretty good numbers for Hoyer. The one real blemish that's noticeable, Minka Fitzpatrick, 96-yard pick 6 at a time that the Steelers just absolutely needed it in the second quarter. Team was already down, was down 10-3.
3 interceptions for Minka in the past, what was it, 6 days for him?
Yeah, 2 against Miami, getting his former team back. And then the huge, incredible play with the Colts going in to score again.
And also, just that play in general was just so smooth. Just cut across the middle, picked that ball off, didn't miss a stride, was gone. He's so smooth. He's such a smooth player. He's so smart. He's got the talent. Yeah, giving up a first-round pick for him was tough to see. Something uncharacteristic for the Steelers. But at this point, it's relatively paying off. And if they can go on a roll here, if they can beat the Rams, they're going to be, you know, rolling along here into a stretch of the season where they should start winning some more games.
Yeah, so let's just preview what we got ahead. We will talk about the Rams game. We'll also talk in college football at Penn State, WVU. I got my irrelevant fact of the day, as always, the I'm Sorry segment. The Penguins with a huge win over the Islanders. We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about the big matchup on campus coming up this Tuesday night, RMU and Pitt basketball.
College basketball is back.
Welcome back, college basketball. We missed you completely, but let's get back to the Steelers. One player that shined, stood out, has been playing better, and I'm not sure if he was going to be. I don't really know if anybody really thought he would reach this level. Now, it's not. I don't want to over-exaggerate a little bit, but Bud Dupuis has been he's been so improved for this team.
I mean, his numbers through 8 games this year have practically have gone past his numbers from his stats from last year already. He's having, like you said, a much improved season this year. He had three tackles against the Colts. Did he have a strip sack or was that against Miami?
I might have been against Miami, but the Bud Dupree's numbers on the year, 32 total tackles, 6 sacks, four tackles for loss. But when I look at this, he has 2 forced fumbles and 1 fumble recovery. The thing that really stuck out to me with Dupree, 3rd and 1 for the Colts, driving, which ended up setting up the Vinatieri missed field goal. Bud Dupree comes off the edge, sets the edge, and takes the running back down to the backfield for a loss of yard. I look at that play and I go, you know, that's a very underrated play right there from Dupree that no one really looked into much. No one really appreciated it at first, just the initial penetration that he had to get off the ball and make a great stop behind the backfield.
I mean, and if you think about it defensively, just overall, I mean, the linebacker position was, you know, one of question through the past couple of years, but they seem like they've shored it up, obviously, with adding T.J. Watt and Devin Bush. But now that Dupree's finally playing at a level that he probably should have been, you're getting, you know, guys like Vince Williams and Mark Barron, you know, stepping in every once in a while, stepping up, making plays. That linebacker core is starting to come around in the full effect. And with, you know, if the secondary can get going as well with Minka back there and Joe Hayden starting to play the way he should, and obviously that D-line continues to be relatively one of the best, even without Stephon to it. I mean, look, Cam Hayward had his day with Quentin Nelson, and Quentin Nelson's one of the best O-linemen in the league.
Surprisingly, he might be the best guard in football right now.
Like, every once in a while, Quentin Nelson was getting, you know, the upper hand, but Hayward was having a day with him. Resulting in, you know, the Jacoby Brissett injury where Hayward just pile-drived Nelson basically right into Jacoby Brissett.
Yeah.
Also, I think I would like to say that if Brissett doesn't get injured, I don't think the Steelers go out and win that game.
I don't know, because Hoyer came in and threw 3 touchdowns.
I know, but like he wasn't like mobile. There wasn't the escapability that Brissett has.
He gives them another option.
Mm-hmm. And so he gives an option with his legs. And I just think that they wouldn't even have been in the position to kick the field goal with Vinatieri in the first place.
Yeah, I would agree. They probably would have done much better field management with Jacoby Brissett in there.
Yeah, I'm with that. I agree with that. Now, the running game for the Colts, it was okay. They had a bunch of guys with carries. But the leading rusher, Marlon Mack, 4.2 average on the ground, 89 yards on 21 rushes for an average of 4.2. The running game was okay for the Colts, but it was really the passing game that really stuck out to them. Zach Pascal had a nice day, 5 catches for 76 yards and a touchdown. Jack Doyle had a touchdown along with Chester Rogers. Nate, your standout player to watch was Paris Campbell.
Yeah, an all right game. He could have scored easily on the one, but
touchdown.
Yeah, he fell.
Yeah, he fell. 5 catches, 53 yards for Campbell.
Also rushed for 27.
3 rushes, 3 carries. 3 carries, 27 yards.
One thing that has just stood out to me is just very odd and unusual. Why is Eric Ebron not getting involved in the Colts offense? Last year with Andrew Luck, he was a red zone target.
That's because Jack Doyle was out.
He was a force in the red zone.
He had 2 receptions, and he only had 2 targets in his game.
I don't understand it.
I guess they think Jack Doyle is the better tight end, and that's who.
But he's not.
But you got to also realize, Brissett probably has his favorites, and then when Hoyer comes in, they have other favorites. But I mean, the first play was the Jack Doyle, so I don't know.
I'm not a big Jack Doyle fan. I don't see what's all. I'm more of an Ebron fan because I saw what he did last year.
That's the question here. Why isn't he getting?
It
you know,
was
the
with
more
Luck,
reps?
So that might be part of it. But I don't know. I just think that Eric Ebron stretches the field, you know, so much better than their other tight ends.
He's a better deep threat.
Now they do have, you know, they have some tight ends. I mean, they got Mo Alie-Cox is not too bad either. Along with, as you said, Jack Doyle catching a touchdown. I just think Eric Ebron is superior to both of those guys, and I don't understand, you know, the big physical presence that he is and how good he was last year. Why you don't just target him and try to get him the ball? and try to make a guy miss. I don't know. I don't necessarily understand why, but hey, that's not the team that I'm trying to figure out. We're trying to figure out the Steelers. So let's talk about Mason Rudolph a little bit. What did you guys think of his performance? It was, you know, he's not really standing out as great, but he's also not throwing the ball away, turning the ball over, I mean, and you know, making the Steelers. He's not forcing the Steelers into a very bad situation. He's really just a game manager at this point, at least for this game, and that's something that he can't
maybe,
be.
Maybe for the season. I mean, how many games has he played? 4 or 5? I mean, they haven't even. I feel like they haven't even opened up all the playbook to him.
Well, his numbers on the air. He's played 6 games, started 5 of them, coming in for Ben in week 2. He's over 1,000 yards with 1,088. He's fumbled 3 times though. 10 touchdowns, 4 picks. You know,
it's not
okay. But he does not. He's just not throwing the ball really down the field. 66.1 completion percentage, passer rating of 94.7.
I mean, you look at Jalen Samuels' stats, and you're like, wow, 13 reception. He must have had a day. But it was really just Rudolph the dump-offs.
Yeah, so Jalen Samuels breaking Steelers' records with running receptions out of the backfield for running back, 13 for 73 yards. But the ground game for him was just not was non-existent. 8 rushes for 10 yards. But that opened up the possibility for Trey Edmonds, Terrell's brother, new running back called
Wait,
up from the practice
they,
squad.
They are brothers.
I thought the brother plays in Buffalo. I think
Jermaine Edmonds plays
in
Buffalo.
I think they're brothers.
No, because
sure
me and my dad were trying to discuss. We were just trying to figure it out. And I thought Trey Edmonds was his cousin.
It might be a cousin because I know Tremaine, the one over in Buffalo, is the brother.
All right, anyways, continue.
We'll figure it. We'll find out. But Edmonds, his numbers on the day were pretty solid, pretty good game for him. 12 rushes, 73 yards. He had that long of 45 that really helps the stats, but a 6.1 average nonetheless. You know, I think Edmonds, you know, he provided some stability, and he was a hard-nosed runner, and it was good to see him, you know, be able to put his neck out there on the line, and he was running hard, and it was good to see from him, especially from a guy off the practice squad.
And we finally saw the Washington-Rudolph connection a little bit with him leading the receivers in receptions with 4.
He made a couple
crazy catches.
The one was thrown behind his back, and he had to extend his arm out to make that play.
He had to reach back and grab that with 4 receptions for 69 yards.
And I think that just shows also the skill level of Washington and that maybe they should be thrown to him a little bit more, that he can make those plays.
And then Juju didn't even crack 20 yards. I mean, are the Colts cornerbacks that good?
No.
No. Now, the thing is with Juju, they did talk to him, after the game, and he's not totally concerned about his, you know, target level and his numbers. So,
if you're – We all hailed him as a number one. A number ones don't get 3 receptions for 16 yards.
He's a number one with Ben. He's a number one receiver in the offense. It's just the thing is, do you need a number one receiver in this offense? Obviously you need a go-to guy, but it just depends on which given day who is going to be the go-to guy. That's my thing.
Now let's be honest, they do need a lot more offensive productions because just think about in this game. The Steelers scored a touchdown off the defense. Also, Jalen Samuels fumbled, you know, within, what was it, the 30. That led to a Colts score.
Yep.
And also a safety was given up. So 9 of the Colts points out of their 24 were basically due to the offense. So continuing, you know, the defense sort of, I would say, won them this game a little bit more or the less. I know Vinatieri butched that kick and, you know, the defense, you know, should have probably not let him get into that. Let Hoyer, you know, have such a day and get into the field goal range, but the defense, you know, had another pretty good day for them.
They're giving up a bunch of points, but I feel like we're finally starting to get those stops that we couldn't get beforehand.
For the most part, there's still times when they're charging down the field. I mean,
again, this is a young defense.
Again, if it wasn't for, you know, the Holder and Vinatieri, this would have been a Colts win.
Yeah, I think Steeler defense, you know, I like how they're playing. Now,
they're on the right track.
The numbers, when you look at them, the team stats comparing, you know, how each team played, you look at it, 139 to 90 rushing yards in favor of Indianapolis. Passing yards, 189 to 183 in favor of Indianapolis. Total yards, 328 to 273. Now, the Steelers defensively stayed 5 sacks compared to 1 for the Colts. 1 interception on each side. You know, the penalties were, you know, somewhat even. 7 penalties for 89 yards for Indy, 5 for 70 for the Steelers. The fumbles were a key factor. And I just think
does this even out Samuels with Connor for this year? Fumbles wise, because I mean,
fumbles, Connor have two on the year, and Samuels have just one.
Yeah, but this one Samuels was big time, and Connor had a big time fumble.
Connor had a bunch of big time fumbles, but I don't know. I look at it. Time of possession was pretty even, 30-32 for the Colts, 20-28 for Steelers. We're only just a couple minutes off, but I don't know. I look at it and I say, I'm concerned about the offense. I think the defense is really good.
Yeah.
I do.
I think the defense is going to make plays. They've been flashy. They're getting the takeaways. But, yeah, there's still at times that, there's lapses and they let up the big play.
Well,
but
my problem with the defense is I don't think situationally when they have to be dominant, they're not dominant. Yeah. That's my concern with this defense right now. And I don't know how you improve that. You're not getting Stephon Tuitt back. Sean Davis is not going to be that guy that comes back and, stabilizes that. I think Minka has been the guy to, bring this defense to life and bring them to the next level, to a new phase that they have not been at in a couple of years.
And again, you got to realize that this defense is, at least at the linebacker and secondary position, they're relatively young. I mean, they got a lot of younger guys in there, and TJ Watt, Devin Bush, Dupree's still on the younger end, along with back in the secondary of Minka and, Terrell Edmonds and whoever they throw in at cornerback besides Joe Hayden. A lot of younger names and faces that they're still, building on, their careers and their skill level, that there's still a lot to improve on, that there's a lot of expectations that can be reached for this defense.
Yeah, it's something to look forward to, but
now how are they going to fare against the incoming Los Angeles Rams?
Yeah, let's talk about the Rams.
Four-point
favorites coming into Heinz Field. A 4:25 game on Fox.
A homecoming for Aaron Donald.
Yeah, Aaron Donald returns home. Joe Buck, Troy Aikman will have the call on Fox. Yeah, big game. Big opportunity for Mason Rudolph going up against, young Jared Goff. Todd Gurley against Jalen Samuels with James Conner likely out again. Look at the receiving matchups. Three great receivers for the Rams and Cooper Kupp, Robert Woods, and Brandon Cooks. Cooks, I don't think he's playing. He's been battling injuries.
He's been battling concussion.
They still got Josh Reynolds, another capable receiver. Look at the team coming in.
Big B, Gerald Everett, a tight end.
Gerald Everett is a very good tight end. The Rams are 5-3 on the year. What are you guys looking at in this game saying, what is the key for the Steelers? What do you think the Rams will bring to the table, and what are the odds for the game?
Well, I think at first I was just scrolling through, and I see that they're going to have Ramsey, Shadow, Juju. So we're going to see, is there anybody else that's going to step up in front of Juju, like what's been happening all year, basically. We just need someone else to come through, because I don't believe that Juju is going to be able to get past Jalen Ramsey. I don't see it. So, Deontay Johnson, James Washington, are those guys going to be able to make the big-time plays in order for us to win this game?
Well, one encouraging sign that I saw from the Colts game, I think James Washington was very solid. He made a lot of contested catches that, you weren't really sure, if James Washington's going to make that play. But I know he had one pass from Rudolph that was behind him and made a nice one-handed catch on a critical third down. And I think his progression with Rudolph is critical, especially in this game. But I think the connection with Johnson and Rudolph has also been there. So I think that if the connection with Washington is not necessarily, the best on Sunday, I just think the Steelers can still get by. I think it just depends on the ground game.
It's tough, because I think the Rams are honestly still one of the best all-around teams in the league. Yeah, their record might not indicate that, but they play in a pretty solid division with the 49ers staying undefeated and the Rams at 7-2, at 7-2.
The Cardinals aren't even a pushover either.
Yeah, that division's very tough. And the Rams, I think, just all around have a very solid team. They got, Goff is a solid quarterback. Mm-hmm. Todd Gurley, once he gets going, he can be dominant as usual. In the receiving game, again, we talked about all their options. But defensively, they just got a list of guys that, have proven to be such talented players. Eric Weddle, talked about Jalen Ramsey, Aaron Donald, Dante Fowler at linebacker. Talk about Clay Matthews as well, Marcus Peters, Aqib Talib. All those guys contributed.
Marcus Peters got traded, I think.
Did he end up?
Yeah, Marcus Peters is in Baltimore.
My bad. That was weeks ago. My bad. But just guys all up and down this defensive roster that make plays and stand out, I think. And obviously Aaron Donald's going to come back into Heinz Field and be a menace and be a force, you know, going at that offensive line.
It'll be a testament to see how good this O-line is with a generational pass rusher, going against a generational pass rusher in Aaron Donald.
Yeah, and along with his, you know, complementary players like, you know, Matthews and Dante Fowler, those guys really bring the heat. So it will be interesting to see. I mean, Aaron Donald only has 5 sacks.
Usually
he had 5 sacks, but Fowler is at 6.5, and Matthews at 6.
In defense to Donald, he is probably double teamed almost every play.
Yeah, that's still just 5 sacks.
His numbers early on in the season last year were not up to par, but he ended up with, 20.5? So I don't think it's going to be much of a problem for Aaron Donald once he gets down the stretch. And, you know, football weather starts playing a factor. I think he'll be just fine. So let's take a look at the injury report, as we do every week. Injury report as of Thursday afternoon's practice. James Conner with a shoulder injury, did not practice. Not likely to go against the Rams. I think he might already even be ruled out. Ramon Foster has been battling a concussion. He did not practice again. Ryan Switzer has a back injury. He was full. Benny Snell has a knee injury. This just continues the line of injuries in the running back room for the Steelers. Benny Snell, knee, did not practice. Trey Edmonds has a rib injury. He also did not practice, but I would expect him to be good to go. Roosevelt Nix has been dealing with a knee injury throughout the whole entire season. He did not practice Thursday. I still would expect him to go, though. Mark Barron, Vance McDonald, Marquise Pouncey had the Veterans Day off Wednesday. They were all full participants. But Tyson Alualu popped up on the injury report late Thursday with a knee injury. He did not practice. So that is the injury report. I would look for Alualu, Nix, and Edmonds to play. Benny Snell, no. James Conner, no. Ramon Foster, let's just wait and see. But there you have it. There's the injury report. Rams coming into town. I don't know if struggle is the best word, but the Rams have just not been necessarily up to par with how they played last season. Now, last year, they had an incredible year. But losses to Tampa Bay at home where the defense gave up 55 points, losing by one at Seattle, losing to the 49ers at home, the undefeated 49ers. And then their last two wins at the Falcons, blowing them out. They're a 1-7 team. And beating the wingless Bengals at home before getting their bye, before coming to Heinz Field. So I think that, you know, the extra week of preparation will help the Rams, but they also don't really have any great wins other than the Saints in week 2 on their resume. And that was when Drew Brees, if I'm not mistaken, got hurt.
Yeah, I believe so, because it was Donald, I think, that hurt him.
Yeah, so I don't know. They also beat the Browns and the Carolina Panthers. There's not a lot
not a
on
strong
this.
Resume
well, the,
as
the
you said.
The Panthers are 5-3, I think.
Yeah, they beat the Panthers with Cam, but
when Cam was
you know just about broken and out. But I look at this Rams team; they're not the same as before, but they're still a very capable team with a lot of the same pieces, a lot of great talent on the team. I think the Steelers need to jump out to an early lead. I would consider taking the ball if you win the coin toss. I like deferring. I am a big defer to the second half guy. Get the ball. Try to double up as New England loves to do. I think, you know, if you can get an early lead on the Rams, why not do it? But I would understand both ways. I think it's going to be a back-and-forth competitive game, but you never know what's going to happen with the Steelers, especially with Mason Rudolph. It's been an unpredictable season. We'll see what happens. Nate, let's move on. College football. Give us our Pitt, Penn State, and WVU weekly coverage.
Starting off with Penn State, number 4 team in the nation in the college football playoff
Penn
pool.
State.
Clifford the Big Red Dog.
The big first unveilment of the college football playoff rankings, but Penn State in the playoffs if they started today. How about that?
Yeah, and they take on another undefeated team in the Minnesota Golden Gophers. How about that? Minnesota, I think for the first time in a long time, maybe ever, are
PJ
undefeated
Fleck.
Heading into, you know.
Just got that hefty extension, I believe.
They got the PJ Fleck connection there, coach. I think he just signed a 7-year extension through
I think it was
forever.
Something like that.
But the thing with Minnesota, there's no dominant wins for them. You know, they've played all the inferior teams in the Big Ten so far. So this Penn State team is going to be real testing. Penn State continues to prove why they're the best. They do come off a bye, so they did not play last week. Neither did Minnesota. But this matchup's going to be fun to watch. Two undefeated teams going at it in Minnesota. We'll see how, you know, Sean Clifford can, you know, rule the offense for the Nittany Lions. I've talked about it week in and week out. Pat Freiermuth continues to be an NFL caliber tight end. He had 3 touchdowns versus Michigan State Spartans. He's a very talented tight end back there. And again, Penn State continues to have those tight ends that develop into stars.
Football. I've been impressed by their tight ends, but I'm really impressed by their defense. I think Penn State's defense is just they've shut opponents down. They really have not had much of a, you know, opportunity to get big plays on Penn State.
And I think Pitt and Michigan have been able to put double digits up on them, and like
they're like the only team.
Yeah, that's double digits.
And
so
maybe Iowa.
Those are, you know, schools that should.
Yeah, but this the defense, crazy. I mean, they continue to be, I think, only allowing about just under 10 points per game. I mean, shutting out teams that thought maybe would have a better chance, but continuing. Micah Parsons, he's unreal at linebacker, 57 total tackles on the year. He continues to be one of the most well-rounded defensive players in college football, and they just have list of players that just go on of talented players. Local product, Lamont Wade, continues to be big-time factor for them up there. Garrett Taylor, Tyreek Castro Fields in the secondary as well. They all-around defense just strong, probably the strongest defense in the nation, arguably.
I think so.
They continue to go in to Big Ten matchups and sort of just dominate, and it's thanks to that defense. Yeah, the offense is producing when it needs to be, but their defense is coming up with the big-time stops that need to come up with them. And obviously, we'll see probably the real challenge in a week with Ohio State. But
that's if Chase Young plays.
Ohio State, the number one seed in the college football playoffs today.
Big Ten showing some stuff with some of their teams, with Ohio State, Penn State, and now Minnesota.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about those rankings real quick?
Sure.
Top four, top six, college football.
I think it should be LSU.
I think LSU should be one, Bama should be two, and Ohio State should be somewhere in the mix at three.
I like Ohio State at two, and then Bama at three.
When we were watching, you know, the poll being released, everybody knew Clemson was just not going to make it.
No.
Clemson does not have the resume. They just don't have the good teams. And it's the ACC, too. ACC is one of the weakest Power 5 conferences right now.
I think Clemson's so talented. I would not have been surprised if they were the 4 seed and Penn State was the 5.
Everyone wants to see Trevor Lawrence in the playoffs.
Yeah, Trevor Lawrence, Dabo Sweeney, coach team, good defense. You know, that's what you want to see.
Exactly.
Now, obviously, after this week and next week, we're going to see teams that are no longer undefeated with, you know, potentially Penn State and Ohio State potentially losing.
Or LSU and Bama.
And then LSU and Bama. So there's going to be teams that are going to end up falling out, and Clemson will find its way back because they're going to run the table. I just don't see them losing. They're not going to lose to Wake Forest. They're not going to lose in the championship.
To Pitt or Virginia.
Yeah. Clemson's going to end up going in to the college football playoff. And then it's a throw between LSU, Ohio State, Penn State, Bama, because it just depends who wins these games. And
if it does come down to that, I think I give it to LSU. They've had more top 5 wins.
Now the thing is, top 10 wins, if Penn State for some reason were to lose to Minnesota, but then they beat Ohio State and they go into the Big Ten championship and they win, do they make it over Ohio State, who has one less game but only one loss as well?
I guess
Penn State head-to-head, they beat Ohio State, so I guess.
Yeah, and they're Big Ten champions, and they lost to a Minnesota team that was 8-0 on the season coming into it. So,
weaker 8-0 team out of majority
but
of
still,
undefeated.
Still undefeated.
Still a top 15 team.
Yeah. All right, so moving on to the okay Pitt Panthers continue to be just gliding along. They are bowl eligible again, 6-3.
Pitt, go to the bowls.
They were 6-3, a win over Georgia Tech last week. 20-10 victory, not anything spectacular. Far from that, if anything. They continue to squeak by with just these very, unorthodox ways of winning. Just, again, defense being
the key,
you know, characteristic of this football team. They had a huge fumble recover at the goal line. That ended up going back, I think, 70 yards into Georgia Tech territory late in the game, too. That was that would have tied the game at 17 if Georgia Tech scores. Big recovery for Cam Bright. Paris Ford also another interception. He continues to ball out back there in the secondary. I think that's four interceptions on the season for him. Continues to be a playmaker. Vincent Davis had a big run, 61 yards out of the Wildcat for a score for Pitt. But I don't know. They continue to be, for a record that's 6-3, they still continue to be subpar. Should have never lost to Miami.
Nope.
They should be 7-2, and they should be winning that. They should be leading the Coastal because Virginia, they came out against UNC, came out on top. Virginia, they look pretty darn good. UNC is not a pushover, and that's who the Panthers take on next, but not this weekend as they have sort of this mini bye. They go and play them next Thursday.
Yeah, they play the same. Days. They play the same night as the Steelers. What a smart idea on the scheduling department's ideas.
Yeah, that one's at Heinz Field in the cold. It's, I believe, going to be about 32 degrees.
Steelers will be in Cleveland Thursday Night Football.
Two really cold games. And then the last team to touch on, the West Virginia Mountaineers. They are 3-5. They continue to just be...
They're pretty bad.
Yeah. But they lost to a number 12th-ranked Baylor, 17-14, though. That game was a bit closer. But some bigger news coming out of WVU. Jack Allison, one of their quarterbacks there, is entering the transfer portal. He's a redshirt sophomore. He's appeared in a number of games for the Mountaineers, but hasn't been anything spectacular. Austin Kendall, they're going to stick with him. But they continue to not have a running game. We continue to touch on that. They just can't seem to get it going. They take on Texas Tech, another 3-5 team in the Big 12. This will be a matchup to see who could get the four wins if they can potentially, you know, win out here and be bowl eligible. But right now, West Virginia, you know, sort of sticking around, I guess, a little bit in the conversation of if they'll become bowl eligible with a couple games remaining. So that right now is the college football update.
That's college football. All right, let's go to the irrelevant fact of the day. Thank you. Today's irrelevant fact of the day pertains to the NHL. This is something interesting. So the 1972 Boston Bruins, you know, they won the Stanley Cup, right? Yeah, they won the Stanley Cup. Well, you know how each team, their name is inscripted on the Stanley Cup, right? Yeah. Well, the Boston Bruins had a little malfunction. Something was wrong. You want to know how they spelled Boston? BQSTQN. Oh God, the
how do you pronounce that?
I don't know. So the Boston Bruins. Not that we're gonna give much love to Boston and feel bad for them, but the 72 Boston Bruins spelled. I'm not going to even try it. BQSTQN. That's your irrelevant fact of the day that no one wanted to hear, but everyone has to anyway. So now let's go to the I'm sorry segment of the day. Who would like to start? Please no one take mine.
I would like to say, Philip Rivers, I'm going to be Philip Rivers apologizing to the Chargers fan base. Because
what Charger fan base? Come on now.
Yeah, they play in a soccer stadium, and they're talking about moving to London.
Okay, the Chargers organization, because he's awful. He's washed. He can't throw the ball anymore. I'm watching that game last night. I wondered what happened to him. He was an MVP candidate last year.
Yeah, he was terrible, but I'm not going to look that much into it. Prime time game in Oakland.
But he lost, Detroit. You go and botch it in Detroit. You botch it against a Steelers team that had Duck Hodges.
Detroit.
Now, if I wouldn't know any better, it seems like the best thing he's doing now is making kids.
Ooh.
Wow. All
right, so
Philip Rivers to the Chargers organization. I am sorry.
So my I'm sorry is to the West Virginia faithful. I'll stick with college football. They're having a subpar season at 3-5. So I'm going to say I'm sorry, Mountaineers fans down in Morgantown who party every weekend and get hyped for these games, and they show a lot of loyalty and passion to this team. 3-5. Jack Allison heading to the transfer portal only after a few short seasons of competitive play They are sitting at the bottom of the Big 12 conference. So I'm sorry.
WVU. All
right, let's hear it.
I got two. I want to say I'm sorry to Jalen Samuels. You had all those receptions, but you also fumbled and couldn't run the ball. So I'm sorry that you had some numbers like that. But my real I'm sorry went is going to Minkah Fitzpatrick. I'm sorry that I thought that that trade was going to be very bad for the Steelers. I think it is well worth it right now. I think it's to stabilize the defense. The defense has a new identity with Minkah. He flies around the ball, and he makes plays when necessary, including a 96-yard pick six of Brian Hoyer that the Steelers much
that
needed.
That was such a big-time play. Yeah.
Fun fact, I went to the bathroom whenever the pick happened, so I saw it on my phone. I was screaming
in the bathroom.
That was a very fun fact from you. Thank you, Glenn.
Yes, no one needed to hear. I'm sorry, Minkah, but thanks for making plays on the field. Let's touch on this first. There is really no Pirates news to talk about. They're talking about Charrington, the former GM, a baseball ops guy from the Boston Red Sox, maybe as a candidate for GM. Yeah, no really other names to look at. Joe Espada looks like he might be the favorite in San Francisco to be the new manager, which is very much, you know, upsetting me because I would like him to be the Pirates manager. But, you know, when you fire your GM and you do a managerial search, then you put it on hold because you don't have a GM, well, this is what you get. And you end up with, I wouldn't say scraps, but you don't get your first option if at least Espada was your first option. So there you go, baseball. Now, Penguins, big 4-3 OT win over the New York Islanders.
That team,
let's talk about it.
That team had won 10 straight games, and no one every
no
time
one,
I tell
no one cares.
No one
cares.
No one cares about the Islanders, but that's a thing. Like, the players bought in to Barry Trotz's system.
It's honestly a relatively boring team, the Islanders.
Shows you don't need star power in the NHL.
They're like the Senators of a few years ago.
The Guy Boucher one.
You know, they get it done. They win games, but they're a very boring, relatively defensive team. And
it's more of,
they squeak in and they
it's
actually
more of they score two goals and then they sit back on you.
And then when it comes to the playoffs, they can actually, you know, be good because
it's something that works in
the defense
hockey.
Is helping them, yeah.
But that was to no avail. Brian Rust had other plans, scoring two goals that game. He had the OT winner, which I did not see, but I heard it was
pretty
sick.
Oh, it was nice. It was a nice wraparound. I don't know how it snuck in, but big-time goal for him. But how about the Penguins? Two games in a row coming back from 3-0. Four unanswered goals against the Bruins.
But, I mean, it's not something we should be making a habit of.
Yeah, going down 3-0 is definitely not, because that's a tough deficit to overcome. But they did it twice against the Bruins team, also another team that's
if it weren't for Brad Marchand, him and his 5 points he had that game.
Yeah, that team continues to be very impressive. Islanders, again, not a pushover as they won 10 straight games. But the Penguins, you know, luckily, they didn't get a point against the Bruins, but they do get two in overtime versus the Islanders heading into Barclays Center, which relatively empty as usual over in New York.
I just want to support. Like, if your team wins, starts winning 10
and
plus.
Also, it makes no sense. It's New York. It's the biggest city in America. Why are
the
they
Knicks
not
aren't good?
It?
The Nets aren't going to be good for another year.
Okay, Okay,
like, what's stopping you from?
Let's talk about something real quick. In sports, the idea of a bandwagon, I think is stupid. I think it's dumb, because when teams are bad, your fan base is not going to come and support them. I mean, it's just plain and simple. Except maybe for, you know, some certain situations where the Montreal Canadiens fan base goes out. The Steelers will always support. You know, the team, well, actually, we don't know, because we've always saw
Steelers
a relatively
good.
A winning team. I mean, there's teams that, you know, if they're bad, they will continue to get the support. But there's teams that, you know, when they become bad, they don't get the support. Chicago Blackhawks, back before, you know, the 2010 decade, they didn't get a lot of support. But it's New York, though. For the Islanders and for a winning team, it makes no sense at all for being a team in a city that has 8 million plus people, include, and then you throw in the surrounding boroughs and stuff. It's just confusing to me. I guess everybody's just a big Rangers fan in New York and don't care about the Islanders.
broad with the big Broadway at the MSG.
Rangers.
Yeah, but the Penguins, you know, they do bounce back in this win. I think it's big for them.
Malkin had a goal, didn't he?
Yeah, he's come back from injury. They're playing relatively okay.
I think he has, like, what, 2 points in three games?
Yeah, he finally getting on the score sheet. Penguins, though, last weekend, last Saturday, took on Edmonton. They lost in overtime there. A close game for them. Leon Draisaitl, one of the best players right now in the league, scores in overtime. He actually is the
point leader.
Yeah, so, but the one thing that continues to struggle for the Penguins, their power play. They went 0 for 8 in the last three games on the power play. 0 for 5 against the Oilers. They could have easily won that game.
Yikes.
If they would have scored once on the power play in regulation. Once. So the power play continues to, you know, not meet expectations.
Well, the power play's been having.
I mean, throwing Gino back in will definitely help. But they went 0-2 with him in the lineup in against the Islanders and 0-1 in Boston.
Well, the Islanders probably have a good penalty kill. Don't.
Yeah, but whenever you go 0-5 against the Oilers, who we know don't have really good defense and don't really have a good goalie either, they should be scoring on the power play.
I mean, we made Mike Smith look insane. He was all over the rink.
Yeah,
so he was just making crazy save after crazy save.
So, leading the Penguins so far this year, Crosby, 17 points.
No surprise.
No surprise there. Gensel follows him up with 13 points,
seven goals.
Letang having a good season to start, 12 points for him, behind Gensel Crosby.
That might lead all defensemen. Don't quote me on it.
No. I don't know. I don't believe so. But Penguins are getting the production, you know, from across the board. Marino, first goal of the year for him, coming out of the box. Scored on a breakaway against Boston. A nice goal, tucking it in. Five hole.
I like him. I like him as a defender. And then
I think he'll be low-key. Maybe he'll turn into a Dumoulin, where Dumoulin sort of came up, was a 5th, 6th defenseman. And
now he's on our first-line unit.
So he continues to impress and improve for the Penguins. The Penguins go in to tomorrow and take on the Chicago Blackhawks, a team that sort of falling into oblivion here in the latter parts of the decade after a really good...
But again, this is still a team with a bunch of good young pieces. Kirby Dock. Adam Boqvist, DeBrincat,
still got
Kane.
Yeah,
I mean this team is still
defensively they're okay. I mean Duncan Keith and Seabrook are on the ends of heading to the
and with a young surging 20-year-old Adam Boqvist who is, I think, gonna be a great defenseman. He is super super crafty, super slick with a really nice wrist shot, can place it well. I like him as a player, but we'll see what goes on.
So, Penguins heading into this game. Chicago is 5-7-3. Pens right now third in the Metropolitan. Right now they are 9-6-1 with 19 points. That'll be a good contest when it comes to it. So
yep, there's the Pens. One quick update just came out. The Ravens have signed linebacker LJ Fort to a 2-year extension.
For
2021, pays him $5.5 million. He's going to get $3.25 annually. Or he's going to get $3.25 million fully guaranteed at the signing, and also next year. How about that?
LJ Fort,
who was cut by the Eagles, and it was a former Steelers special teams player. Pretty interesting there for LJ Fort. But let's get into the main event. Not really, but it's going to be fun anyway. Tuesday night here on the campus of RMU. The Pitt Panthers coming to town.
I mean, not really the town. I mean, this is their town, but
yeah, they come to
the moon.
They come to the moon.
They come to the suburbs. They come to the suburbs.
Yay, moon! Not really, but
opening
whatever.
Up the UPMC Event Center.
Yeah, first basketball game in the UPMC Event Center for the RMU Colonials, hosting Pitt.
They're making it a pretty big deal. I mean, opening up tickets for students early on Monday,
7 a.m. We got to wake up at 6. Congratulations! It's gonna be a lot of fun. We're standing in the cold.
Obviously, they expect to sell a crowd inside the arena, and then also they're having a big screen on the Nicholson Lawn, which is the big lawn here on campus.
The game's on ESPNU.
I don't think anybody is going to be out there in 30-degree weather watching a Pitt Army basketball game.
Let's just be honest. No one is going to be sitting out there in the cold under the big screen. But, hey, You should. You get a free shirt. I'm going to go get my free shirt before I go into the game.
And then after the
game. I'm going to do the same. I need my free shirts.
And then after the game, whether win or loss, the RMU campus will set off fireworks.
Yeah.
To celebrate the opening of the UPMC Event Center.
Yay.
Already, though, even though it's been played in for the past month and a half.
Well, not basketball, though.
Yeah, and that's the big sport here.
Basketball's big up here. So let's preview both teams. RMU, their next game tomorrow. They have a game before Tuesday. They're at Notre Dame and our buddy Tommy Holland. Let's just say.
Up there in South Bend.
Let's just say, how many points do you think the Colonels are going to lose by? 15, maybe? Notre Dame? You think they're
ready? I don't know. Notre Dame hasn't been too good. I mean, obviously, just coming off a loss to Austin's.
My North Carolina Tar Heels.
Cole Anthony putting up a very impressive, you know, performance for them down there, the freshman. But Colonials going into South Bend. Ugh. I don't know.
Coming off a loss.
Probably 20 points. I'd say 20 points if they can stick around.
Yeah.
To Notre Dame, that's not terrific.
RMU coming off of a loss at Marshall on Thursday night, 67-60, losing in Marshall. But that's that. Pitt. Coming off of a nice home win over Florida State.
Opening up the season for the ACC, every team's going to play an ACC matchup. So Pitt gets the odds of having it as a home game in front of the Zoo and all the new features inside the Pete.
The Pete looks incredible with new scoreboards everywhere. New scoreboards even where the old retired numbers used to be. And Nate, what's your favorite feature of the Peterson Event Center?
The scoreboard? The bridge on top of the scoreboard looks nice.
Yeah, it's pretty neat. It's going to be...
They also switched around the Zoo.
Yep.
Or at least the way the camera angle is on the Zoo.
Yeah, they flipped the court the other way so that you can see the Oakland Zoo now in the background on TV, which is pretty neat. Pretty good to see. Who are your players to watch for Pitt coming off of the win against Florida State, 2-point win?
I know who you're going to say.
Yeah, I know who you're
going to
say, too.
But I'm not going to... I'll let you take the shine on
him.
I want to look at Terrell Brown, the big man down in the paint. I think, you know, he'll have a very impressive game, getting, you know, a handful of rebounds, maybe a couple blocks against the Colonials, going double digits again after he went for 13 points against the Seminoles at home. I think he's your guy to watch on Tuesday for the Panthers.
And for me, I'd like to look at Xavier Johnson, even though his jump shot is whack. He still is very good at driving to the hole and getting solid 2 points and drawing fouls and getting free throws. And maybe with that jump shot, hopefully he'll knock down a three or two.
We got a shooter in Oakland, downtown Oakland, Ryan Murphy. Welcome to Pitt. Finally, someone for Pitt basketball that can shoot. Last year, nobody that could shoot the three.
Except Olsen Fram, somewhat.
Yeah, somewhat. Ryan Murphy, 4-for-4 from the free throw line, 3-for-6 from three, 13 points in 32 minutes off the bench. Good to see Jeff Capel bring him in as a transfer. He's a junior this year. We're going to have him next season as well. Pretty great to see someone shoot.
Now, let's just touch on this Pitt game, though. This game, though, was so bizarre, but I guess it's just the early stages of college basketball that's going to, you know, it's going to show the inconsistencies of a team. Not a ton of offense, you know. It wasn't a good game offensively for either team, especially in the first half. Both teams really struggled. I mean, they went into half tied.
Yep, 25-25, no offense.
A lot of missed opportunities on both ends of the floor for those teams, but Xavier Johnson and Trey McGowan's two guys that they expect to, you know, be big time players. I mean, they did go double digits, but not an impressive game by any means for either of those guys. But also Pitt, the big thing for Pitt, they rely on the drawing fouls. That's how they won against Florida State last year, who was 11th when they played them, upsetting them at home. And then this year again, starting off the season so similar, because they're still an undersized team, so they're going to rely on drawing the fouls and heading to the free throw line to potentially win them games throughout the ACC. But it's a good start for them going 1-0 in the ACC.
Yeah, at least it wasn't Syracuse's offensive performance they put up at home, having 34 points against Virginia. They had 19 at half and 15 in the second half. Defense.
Jim
Virginia
Boeheim.
Cavaliers, 11th overall in the country. Jim Boeheim not finding much offense. The only offense coming from Buddy Boeheim, 7 points. And Elijah Hughes, who had 14. But, yeah, what are you guys looking forward to in this matchup between Pitt and RMU? I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I think this
will be my first college basketball game. So
hopefully we'll all be there. I hope that you guys will wake up. I know I will, to get in line at 7 a.m.
The best part of the game, I think, is just going to be the atmosphere. As coming to this game, cheering for the Colonials, you know, don't really expect to win. But the atmosphere is going to be fun. It's going to be buzzing. So it'll be interesting to see all these big time Pitt players coming in. Ryan Murphy, see him in person. Close too, compared to where probably for the most part, if we go to the Pete, I mean, tickets are going to probably keep on going up as they continue to improve and impress and find success on the court. So it'll be the atmosphere. I mean, Pitt, I think, will pretty much walk over them, all over them. So unless Pitt continues to show an offensive performance that as they did in the first half, where they couldn't really find a bucket, so.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a great atmosphere. It's going to be a very entertaining game, very enjoyable game. The score for RMU faithful is not going to be very enjoyable, but I think the atmosphere in the game is, you know, going to be all well worth it. So let's go to the what ifs that I've created. What if Minka did not intercept Brian Hoyer in the red zone? What do you think?
They Colts win the football game.
Oh, they win that football game. Hoyer probably scores, they grab 3 points. And, you know, the Steelers just haven't found the offensive production that they needed to get. Minka, obviously, you know, adding a huge score for them. If that doesn't happen, they don't win that game by far.
Well, I ask you then, what if Jacoby Brissett would have played and Minka did have the interception?
I think the Steelers win. I think they continue. I mean, so far in that game, Brissett wasn't putting up crazy numbers.
No.
He wasn't, you know, impressing. So I think Steelers continue, you know, to move on. I mean, Brissett was 4 for 5, but only for 60 yards. So, I mean, for only 60 yards, I mean, still relatively
still
decent
day.
Stats. Yeah.
I mean, for what? He barely played a quarter.
He was on pace for it to have a nice day.
Yeah, I'm going to say the Colts still. I think the Colts still win. But I mean, it's still one hell of a play. But honestly, I don't even think Brissett makes that kind of throw in the first place.
Yeah, but it's all about the circumstances. I think, you know, even if Brissett was in there and even if he didn't throw the pick, I think Steelers, you know, would have, you know, continue to play the way maybe they were playing against him. As when Hoyer came in, they didn't, I mean, at first adjust to him, obviously off the first play, but they adjusted him to him nicely. I mean, they did level up 3 touchdowns, but they ended up winning the ball game, so can't complain.
Now, what if T.Y. Hilton would have played? What do you think would have happened in that situation?
Colts would have won again.
Yo, you're riding that Colts bandwagon.
I mean,
again, win.
You put your star receiver in. I mean, good things are just going to happen.
Yeah, that one's tough. I mean, they had already a lot of offense and weapons in this game, and you add in T.Y. Hilton, you know, one of the better receivers in the league. I don't know. Maybe they come out on top because he has a couple big receptions if Jacoby Brissett and him are playing. So, but you for the Steelers, honestly, can't complain about this win. Can't for a team like the Steelers or like Pitt basketball, where, you know, they're playing maybe subpar to where maybe they should be playing, a win's a win, and you take it, you ride the momentum, you gain confidence, you just move on.
Yeah, that's just how it is. So let's go to the predictions for the weekend, and everything in between. Steelers and the Rams at Heinz Field. Who wins it and why?
I think we're going to see a dominating performance from Aaron Donald. He's going to cook through Pouncey and whoever they try to double with. I mean, I just think Mason Roof is just going to have – I don't think he's going to have the greatest game. I think – it's going to be an ugly showing, and I think it's just going to be an ugly game in general. But I think that the Rams are going to beat the Steelers by the score of 28-13.
I agree. I think the Rams are going to come into Heinz Field, you know, have their way with the Steelers. I think Mason Rudolph is going to have a day that is very comparable to how Ben Roethlisberger played against Jacksonville Jaguars a few years ago during the regular season, where he threw multiple interceptions. I think Rudolph turns the ball over quite often in this game. I think the Steelers struggle with the Rams' defense and their, you know, the firepower they have back there. And then the Rams' offense just capitalizes on their opportunities, executes. I say this game is ends up getting ugly at the end, ends up being 38-17.
I don't think it's that bad. I do have the Rams winning. That's just my prediction, not obviously what I would hope to happen. But I think the Rams win by a score of 27-24. I think the game's close. I think games that the Steelers have played with Mason Rudolph, you know, have been close. I don't think the defense is going to let this game get out of hand. And I think it's going to take a Rams game-winning drive down the stretch in the fourth quarter to get the job done. Now, Pitt, North Carolina football next Thursday. And you know what? Do you want to mention? Do you want to touch on the Steelers against the Browns? Because we're not gonna have our Friday show to recap it.
We'll take them. Browns, Steelers. I think the Steelers bounce back win again after the Rams game. I think they go into Cleveland and come up with a more of a defensive game. I don't think Cleveland puts up any massive offensive stats. Neither do the Steelers. I say they say the Steelers come out on top, 17-14.
I'm going to agree with Nate, but I believe that the Steelers are going to get a little bit more of the offensive side. I think it's going to be a score of – it's going to be more 21-10.
Steelers are going to go in there and go 30-17 on the Browns. Browns aren't going to know what hit them. They're going to be cocky coming in here. Hey, we get the Steelers on a primetime Thursday night game. Nah, Steelers got this one covered. But let's go back to Pitt UNC on the same night, conveniently on the same night. Just great, right? The two football games that, you know, are really in the city of Pittsburgh, you play them on the same night. Great, great idea scheduling committees. Who do you have winning that game, Pitt, North Carolina
Sam,
at home?
Sam Howell, he will come in to Pittsburgh and dominate. Their quick strike offense for the Tar Heels is unreal.
They almost beat Clemson.
Yeah, Clemson, they held them close. They held Virginia close, where Pitt, you know, ended up losing, I believe, by 16 to them. At the end of that end of the game for them, I think UNC's offense is strong. They have, you know, a decent defense. Chaz Surratt at linebacker position will be a big time player for them. Pitt's defense will have to come up big, but Sam Howell walks into Heinz Field. UNC, as they always do, beats Pitt in the ACC. Score, I would say, you know, going to be high scoring, probably 35-20. UNC.
I'm gonna side with Nate. I think anytime there's a game that Pitt needs to win in order to take control of the ACC, we don't end up doing it. So I believe that UNC is going to win by a score of, 35-28. I think it's going to be a close one, though.
Now, I actually think Pitt wins. I'm not really sure on score because I don't like the limitations of the offense. So I'm going to go 20-17. And I think Pitt, home, I think they're a better team. I think we've seen that. I worry a little bit about Kenny Pickett, especially about against North Carolina. You know, they were very well coached. But I think Pitt comes out here, surprises some people, and takes the win. So now let's go to We Are Penn State playing Minnesota Golden Gophers. I believe that's the game coming up. Nate, what's your prediction? It's a big
game. My prediction for this game, heading into Minnesota for Penn State and the Lions, I think Penn State wins this game, but I think Minnesota keeps it close. And I think it's going to be a, you know, game-winning drive for Penn State late in the game. And I think Penn State wins this one 30-28.
I agree. I think Penn State does win. I think that 28-17 is the final score. I think Penn State's defense is too good. Their offense with Sean Clifford moves the ball around on Minnesota. I give Penn State the edge, and they stay in the mix for a playoff spot.
Yeah, I believe Penn State's going to win this one. I just like Sean Clifford in that offense, and, of course, you give that great defense. I don't see how they end up losing this game, but I think it's going to be a score of 31-21.
All right, now let's go to the last prediction. Pitt basketball, RMU basketball Tuesday night. What is the score?
Pitt basketball wins by 30.
I think Pitt comes in. Their offense isn't much better, honestly, than the Florida State game. I do say they, you know, improve a little bit on that score. I say around a 72-50 victory.
Yeah, I think Pitt wins by 17 or so. Just I don't know how many points are in each scores. Maybe around 50, like you mentioned. But
it's a fair number to throw
out. It's
there.
A fair number. It's open. It's a good event to open everything up. You know, thanks to Pitt for coming in here and playing us. But you know, Pitt's gonna roll. They're just their team in the ACC is just, you know, it just overmatches RMU. So let's end the show with our weekly shout outs. Who would like to go first?
I will go first. Mom, I know you're listening. And also shout out my boys, Baldwin hockey team. Undefeated so far this season, going on a tear. You guys could have done this with me and Nate at the helm. I would have appreciated that. But you know what, I'll take a Pence Cup for the boys if you bring it in.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Shout out to the boys. I'll add to that. But shout out to Mom and Dad, as usual. Shout out to here on campus, Josh. And Goldberg, he's standing out there right now. What's up, Goldberg?
Goldberg was out there watching our show.
Those are the shout-outs for me. Austin, go ahead.
All right, I always want to shout-out my family, as always. Also want to shout-out the Turkey Bowl chat. Borkland's listening. John Ziegler, my boy, you're listening. Gerchak's probably listening somewhere, wherever he is. But I want to give a shout-out to all of them and thank them, as always, for just being great.
We
got
to get the draft going.
We got to get our Turkey Bowl draft going. We want to make a draft for, obviously, the Turkey Bowl. We got to find a way to record that. Maybe we'll record it on this show. Who knows? Maybe it'll be a separate installment. We just got to, you know, figure that out and find out what we're going to do with that. But, oh boy, Pitt. How RMU you? Basketball coming up. We don't know RMU's theme song, so let's play the Pitt Panther song.
Do they play this at basketball games?
I believe so.
Yeah, they do.
Okay.
For another week, this was show 9.2 because we messed up last week's countdown of the show. This is Baldwin in the Berg, as always, on a Friday. I'm Austin Bechtold.
I'm Nathan Bryson here.
And I'm Andrew Golvash.
Thank you for listening.
Epstein didn't kill himself.
Thank you for listening, as always. We appreciate it. We will see you next week. Enjoy the week of sports. Enjoy the weekend. Stay warm, please. And Turkey Bowl. Coming up soon. Looking forward to it all. Talk to you next week. Reaching out, touching me, touching you.